In a recession, being smart with your money is more important than ever.
Women have long owned nearly half of the country's financial assets, but few know the real state of their own finances.
Plus, seeing where the pundits got it wrong, and poverty as entertainment. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51%, The Women's Perspective. Just how smart are you about money? When money's tight, it's not a question you can afford to avoid. Women traditionally have not been enthusiastic about the topic, but Valerie Coleman Morris, the former business anchor for CNN and author of It's Your Money, So Take It Personally, explains that avoiding the topic is going to cost you. Valerie, I guess the very first thing is when someone starts giving you advice on what to do with your finances, you want to know what their expertise is. So can you kind of explain to people what brought you here and what made you want to share this information?
The most important thing about what I do is that I make sure people understand I am not a certified financial planner. I don't have a Series 7. I am not a broker. I'm a financial journalist. And so what I do and my mission is to make sure that I can have what someone described as a living room conversation with people about their money. So my background is that I have a master's degree in broadcast journalism. I have been in the industry for 40 plus years. But it was about 15 years ago when Lou Dobbs was putting CNN FM, the financial network, on the air, that he hired me. And he said it was because he had all the numbers crunchers he needed, but he needed someone who could have living room conversations with the audience to make them understand that money is something that everyone needs to understand and manage so that they spend it, save it, and invest it wisely.
And I think, judging by the popularity of financial news and a lot of living room conversations, Susie Ormond in particular, there are a lot of people who don't feel that they really understand how to manage their money. What are the big takeaways that you've learned from your investigations?
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing, Susan, is to convince people that being financially independent and literate are two very, very good things to want to do. And a lot of people will say to me, oh, well, I simply can't do that. I take that to my accountant. I take that to my certified financial planner. And my whole point to them is, as the title of my book says, it's your money, so take it personally. And by that it means you need to really understand that you need to pay your own way. That's always best. That means, you know, to understand how much you make and how much you spend, which may seem really basic, but I cannot tell you the number of people who say, well, I don't have a budget. Things kind of work out. It's okay. And my point to them is, if you don't have a budget, or let's call it a spending plan, because that's a friendlier term and it engages people a lot more. If you don't have a spending plan, then you have no idea where discretionary money is. So that means if you want something, how do you get it? You have to know where the money is coming from. You have to have a goal. You have to set it aside. The other basics are you have to save, and you have to keep saving. And then you need to save some more so that you get into the habit of understanding that you pay yourself first. Any money that you get, you put a little bit aside for yourself, and you keep saving and saving.
Have you found any changes in attitude in the past, say, 3-4 years, as opposed to when you first started looking into this and looking at people's attitude toward how they spend their money?
Oh, absolutely. We need to all understand that each of us contributed in some way to this recession. I mean, that really is the bottom line. Yes, there were the people like the Bernie Madoffs who were, making money on top of money on the backs of good people who lost money. But let's look at our personal and individual responsibility. People bought a little bit more house than they needed because they could. They always looked at a new car as being a brand new car instead of a previously owned certified, which is a much better buy. People tended not to look at money in their family as flowing through multiple generations. Now they do. They understand that the baby boomers who were looking at retirement but may in fact have to delay retirement because of the recession and because of money that was spent, there are baby boomers then who need to explain to their families, to the adults who birthed us, our parents, if we're lucky enough that they are still alive, and to the generation that we birthed, our children, that baby boomers are the sandwich generation. We're trying to make money work for us while assisting our parents and taking care of our children. That's a huge stretch. So over the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, people have begun to understand that money needs to be a family affair, that money needs to be discussed more openly in the family, that children need to be aware of what it costs to run a household, that elders need to understand that the home maybe that they always wanted to save, quote, to leave for their children may in fact be the home, because they have so much equity in it, that will in fact pay for their golden years, because elders may have saved judiciously but are living longer and therefore may be outliving their money. So the cycle of how money runs through families is probably one of the biggest changes that I've seen over the past 5 to 7 years.
Are you finding people asking questions about how do I help my grown children who are not making it in this really tough job economy and yet are stretching their parents very thin? I know between college and young people just starting out, it's a true strain on parents.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I've had some very, very difficult conversations with people about this. You mentioned a couple of things. Number one, there are many, many young people in their 20s and 30s who have finished college, finished trade school, done their higher education, are ready to work, and they can't find jobs. And what happens? They boomerang home. So here you have 20 or 30-somethings coming back to the family home at the time that their parents, who are in their 50s and 60s, are looking at getting ready to retire. Meantime, here are the elders who are living longer and we're grateful, but it also means that there is money that needs to be perhaps used to shore up or to accommodate our elders as well. So looking at young people, the biggest problem is they're coming home, maybe to their childhood room, but they're adults. And how can you do that successfully without derailing all the plans of the parents? I suggest a couple of things. Number one, and most important, that there be a conversation between the parents and the adult child who is returning home. What are the new rules? How do things work? How much are they going to give the parents each month and be on time all the time? Because when you look at an adult child being back home, there are expenses. Parents have to separate the heart, oh, this is my child. No, it isn't. This is an adult who you raised hopefully well, who has hit a rough spot and now needs to be able to be at home so they can get their feet under them. But that can't just be at the parents' expense. And third, what's the date that they're leaving? And it's not that that date cannot be renegotiated, but everybody needs to have a goal and dates to work toward. And if not, it can be abused. There are many, many families now who have adult children who have been back home for 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, and relationships are falling apart as a result.
Talk to me, too, about the high cost of medical care, which affects you whether you have young children or if you're getting older or your parents need medical attention, and the whole question of what's going on with health insurance globally. To an individual, what does this all mean?
Well, those are big questions. Health care. It is the single most important thing that everybody needs and wants. It is the single thing in benefits that we find that many companies now, as they lay off people and hire people, they're hiring people as contractors. And the reason companies are doing that is because then they don't have to pay for benefits. So from a company's point of view, that's a very good approach. So what this means is that people have to really look very deliberately at healthcare costs and how they manage them. I speak all the time to women and remind us that knowing our age and telling our age is an asset, not a liability, because there are many age-related benefits that we can get, one of which is if you're 65, you have Medicare. Therefore, women especially, oftentimes we are told, don't tell our age, don't reveal it, because it can be negative. I always say to women, stand in your truth. And I can just tell you, Susan, sadly, that there are still some people who will not tell their age, no matter what. And those are the people who are standing on the sidelines saying, but I can't afford medical care. Yes, you can. Stand in your truth. Be honest. Look for age-appropriate and age-related benefits to fill your needs. And when it comes to health care, best birthday card you've ever received is on your 65th birthday when you get Medicare.
All right, Valerie, finally, let's do talk specifically about women. There was a time, my Mother's Day, where women didn't handle the finances. Are there still a number of women, married women, who don't feel comfortable being really familiar with the family finances?
Well, I have to tell you, yes. That's the sad reality. Unfortunately, that is the case. But what I do think is changing is that there are more conversations that women are having about their money. And I always say that we have some very specific, unique money needs as we age. And women become more vulnerable as we age for five really unique reasons. We have, in general, lower earnings. We have work patterns that oftentimes have us out of the workforce a huge amount of time compared to men. We have health conditions, some of which are not covered by Medicare or a lot of the insurance companies compared to what is covered by men. We're expected to live about 5 years on average longer than men. And our marital status, whether we are married or not, that all plays into how women are going to be as we get older. And the reality is that when it comes to money, women need to be farsighted and start saving early and stick to our money plan. I mean, Susan, the reality is women have long owned nearly half of the country's financial assets, but few know the real state of their own finances. Money is important, so all women need to learn more about accumulating it and protecting it.
That's Valerie Coleman Morris, former business anchor for CNN and author of It's Your Money, So Take It Personally. Find out more at ValerieColemanMorris.com. Coming up, how we used to think the recession would go, and playing a game show to pay the bills. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1201. Sometimes it's really interesting to look back and remember how things used to be, particularly when we're looking at a prolonged global economic recession. 3 years ago, the U.S. was in economic freefall, and Europe was looking, as they say in the U.K., safe as houses. We were doing some serious soul-searching, trying to figure out where we'd gone wrong. Here's the analysis at the time from ThoughtCast's Jenny Ateya.
So, the American economic model is in the dump, and the days of unfettered cowboy capitalism may be over for good. Too many masters of the universe blew it. But while most of them didn't break the law, they did behave like kindergartners. Here's how.
The phrase that will, I am sure, go down in history as a key descriptor of this period was Chuck Prince, the CEO at Citibank, saying, "While the music is playing, you have to keep dancing."
James Paterba is a professor of economics at MIT and the president of the National Bureau of Economic Research.
While everybody might have had suspicions about what was going on. There was a sense that it was the time to take high profits and make high returns on what was happening in the financial markets. I think it's a herd mentality.
So these alpha males, it turns out, were really more like lemmings. But what causes this kind of delusional behavior? Jonah Lehrer writes about the murkier workings of the human mind. And in his new book, How We Decide, he discusses an experiment that simulates real-life stock market bubbles and captures the results on a brain scan.
What you find is a very distinct pattern of brain activity. You find this distinct signal in the midbrain, which is full of dopamine neurons. And what you find is that people, you know, they begin to take these rewards for granted. They make these predictions about rewards, about what the stock market will do. And in this case, they predict it will go up. And then when it does go up, they put more and more of their money into the stock market. So right when the bubbles were about to burst, this was pretty consistent, people started putting all their money into the market because they were so convinced markets always go up. They stopped worrying about a loss.
Now, it turns out that our more lethargic cousins in continental Europe, with their social safety nets and their kinder, gentler capitalism, just might weather this crisis far better than we will. They didn't leverage their future to quite the same extent. But in the good old days, we derided these old Europeans for their prudence.
Americans, even the poor American, have a much higher tolerance than the European for inequality. I mean, Americans tend to view inequality as a ladder that you can climb, while Europeans tend to see inequality as a completely social evil that should be fought very aggressively.
Alberto Alesina is a professor of economics at Harvard.
Europe will not adopt the U.S. model, for the very simple reason that Europeans are much more favorable to social welfare, social security, and social safety net.
But the Continentals might just get the last laugh because, haven't you noticed, we're turning into them.
People on the right wing are already complaining that Obama is trying to create a European-style social democracy. And my response to that is, bring it on.
Now, writer Jim Holt is no populist. He believes the American economic model has been discredited beyond what it deserves. Nevertheless,
what Obama probably will do is reverse the growing inequality in wealth and income in this country. And that alone would be a great achievement.
For ThoughtCast, I'm Jenny Attia.
The irony, of course, is that the recession slammed into the Eurozone, too. Italy, Spain, the UK, they're all struggling to pull themselves out of a downward spiral. Germany's insistence on austerity measures is being challenged as it becomes clear that they're not slowing the slide. And the hopes that an Obama presidency would begin to bridge the widening gap between America's wealthiest and its majority, the so-called wealth gap, well, that's a hope that hasn't been realized. Nor is it clear what policies can achieve that. Even Fox News recently featured an article on a book by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz called The Price of Inequality. In it, he argues that growing inequality and economic unfairness could threaten the stability of the country. But a wealth gap isn't unique to the U.S. In third world and poorer countries, it's the norm. Day laborers in the Philippines are turning to a TV game show as a way to solve their money problems. The popular game show is called Wow Wowie. It features contestants like street vendors, garbage collectors, and other low-wage workers, all competing for money by challenging each other on trivia knowledge, as well as the most heart-wrenching story. Simone Orendane followed one contestant and filed this report.
Jojo Kadungag works as a jeepney driver. That's an open-air minibus used for public transit. But his had been broken down for weeks, and he didn't have the money to fix it. Things got so bad for the 40-year-old and his family, they were eating one meal a day of rice porridge for a week straight. Kadungag says his lowest point was when he bought an ice cream that cost about 11 cents.
Naalala ko yung pamilya ko. Para akong maiyak. Masarap ng kinain ko.
When I thought about my family and my wife and my kids, I wanted to cry. They had no food, no lunch. But me, I had this delicious ice cream. I couldn't just waste it, so I had to finish it. But when I got home, I had to ask for forgiveness.
That week, in his squatter's home, Kadungag was watching TV and saw a call for jeepney drivers to try out for the game show Wow Wow Wee. Wow! This daily lunchtime show is wildly popular here. Six contestants compete for about $22,000 in prize money by first sharing a story about their financial struggles and then going head-to-head in a music trivia game. WowWowWee always looks for players who are facing extreme hardship. They must be engaging and tell a compelling story about their struggle to the show's hosts. Kadungog made the final cut, maybe because he not only supports his own three kids, but also the family of his unemployed brother. Just for being chosen, he received about $110. During the show, the hosts joke about Kadungog's flowing black curls and trimmed goatee, calling him an action movie star. Kadungog tells them he hasn't worked for a month. His jeepney broke down for the fourth time in 5 years, he says. I owe so much money on it that no one will loan me more for the latest fix. His wife, Agnes, takes the mic and reminds him that his family loves him very much. To lighten the mood, WowWowWee asks contestants to show off a talent. Kadungog chooses to serenade his wife. For this and his hard luck anecdote, the hosts give Kadungog the equivalent of about $220. Then he beats the other players in several rounds of a Name That Tune game. The show's producers add more to his winnings, and Kadungog now has a total of about $540. For making it this far, Kadungog gets a shot at serious money in the very last game. A model carries in a stack of cash and hands some of it to Kadungog. He must decide whether to trade in this new pile of cash for one of 10 boxes in front of him. Any one of them could hold the coveted grand prize, 1 million pesos. That's $22,000. The audience, along with all four hosts, scream, "Cash or bukas! Open the lid!" as the model keeps piling on the cash. The final offer reaches 50,000 pesos, about $1,100. Kadungog's wife, Agnes, insists he take the cash, but even with a mic, she's barely audible above the din of frantic voices. Some critics say the show and antics like this take advantage of folks who are down and out. Longtime WowWowWee host Mariel Rodriguez says the show's not out to exploit anyone.
Some people think that way too, because we squeeze it out from them, the hardships in life. But I think they've managed to accept the show for what it is. I mean, it's been here for 5 years, and basically by now, I hope they understand all we really want to do is help and make people happy.
Back on the set, Kadungog has decided to keep the additional money and give up the chance for the big prize of 1 million pesos. He yells out, "Cash!" Kadungog walks away with about $1,600. Afterward, he says he'll use the money to fix his jeepney. The rest will go towards food and school uniforms. Kadungog's happy with the outcome.
Hindi ko inisip na manalo ng ganito ang inano ko na.
I didn't think I'd win this way. I just thought God will take care of me. And by the grace of God, I achieved what I really wanted to happen.
And as for being exploited, Kadungog says he doesn't feel that way at all. And what happened to him was, in his words, a beautiful thing. For the World Vision Report, I'm Simone Orendine in Manila.
That story comes to us from the World Vision Report. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also find a regular column related to 51% at feminist.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.